the animal rights movement is a very different place than it was 10 years ago, and different people have and different groups have responded in a variety of ways. But there is no doubt that there is a chilling effect, and that's why, along with Sarah Jane Blum and Jay Johnson, Lauren Gazzola, and Lana Lehr, I'm one of the plaintiffs in the lawsuit challenging the constitutionality of the Animal Enterprise Terrorism Act that the Center for Constitutional Rights...
And explain that.
We argue that the Animal Enterprise Terrorism Act violates our First Amendment rights. We are chilled from engaging in the sort of advocacy that we once did, and that the AETA is overbroad on its face, and it suppresses our First Amendment rights. And so the Center for Constitutional Rights is pushing that case.
So talk about when an animal rights activist goes to jail, the difference when they're charged with this overlay of terrorism in terms of time that they have to serve.
Well, yeah, as I mentioned, I openly rescued or stole animals from a factory farm, made a movie about it. I mean, it's a real crime. I did it as an act of civil disobedience, but it's a real crime. And I did 40 hours of community service, and that was it. People have gone to prison for years for running a website opposing animal experimentation.
I want to end, we have about a minute to go, with your slogan, see something, leak something.
Right. So secrecy is a cancer on the body of democracy. The records of government are the property of the people, but they're consistently withheld from us on the basis of undefined national security. But as wrote Judge Murray Gerfein in his ruling against the Nixon administration's infamous attempt to prevent the New York Times from publishing the leaked Pentagon Papers, the security of the nation is not at the ramparts alone. Security also lies in the value of our free institutions. And so, building upon this ruling, we as a nation need to foster a broader conception of national security. And in the interest of promoting such a conception born of the free exchange of ideas among an informed citizenry, I call upon all of those with access to unreleased records about illegal, immoral, or unconstitutional government actions to return those records to their rightful owners, the American people, or see something, leak something. The viability of our democracy may depend upon it.
And how do you suggest people leak it?
It's going to be different in all individual cases, but the information is not hard to find online.
Well, I want to thank you very much, Ryan Shapiro, for being with us, called a FOIA superhero for a skill at obtaining government records using the Freedom of Information Act, suing several federal agencies, including the NSA, for their failure to comply with FOIA requests regarding former South African President Nelson Mandela. Ryan Shapiro is also a PhD candidate at the Massachusetts Institute of Technology. Thanks so much for being here. That does it for our broadcast. I'll be speaking in St. Louis, celebrating the First Amendment with the Gateway Journalism Review, Saturday night, March 29th. Check out details at democracynow.org. Democracy Now! Produced by Mike Burke, Renee Pelzer, Monte Norman, Shakespeare Martinez, and Malcolm Honey Masood, Rabbi Karen. Special thanks to Cassandra Lazare. I'm Amy Goodman. Thanks for joining us. Democracy Now! Is a listener-supported grassroots global news hour. You make it possible when you donate at democracynow.org. Thank you so much.
On your concert billboard for Sunday, March 23rd, Gaita Valente will be at the Dix Hills Performing Arts Center in Dix Hills, 2 p.m. Naomi Shelton and the Gospel Queens of Brooklyn will be at the Grey Horse Tavern in Bayport, 2 p.m. The Paul McKenna Band will be at the University Cafe, right here at Stony Brook University, beginning at 2. Ben Robb will be at the Rockwood Music Hall, Manhattan, Stage 1, 3 p.m. Danny Keene will be at Pellegrini Vineyards, 3 p.m. in Cutchogue. The Backroads Trio will be at Shandon Court, East Islip, 5:30. Richard Schindel will be at City Winery, Manhattan, 8 p.m. Your WUSB concert billboard for Monday, March 24th. John Fulbright will be at the Rockwood Music Hall, Stage 2, 7:15. Los Lonely Boys will be at City Winery, Manhattan, beginning at 8. Dmitri Vasilvicek will be at Carnegie Hall, Manhattan, 8 p.m. And the Emerson String Quartet will be at the Stoller Center for the Arts, right here, Stony Brook University, 8 p.m. on your concert billboard for Tuesday, March 25th. The Harlem Blues Divas with the Blues Crusaders will be at the Iridium, Manhattan, 7 p.m. City Winery welcomes Los Lonely Boys at 8. The Robert Cray Band with special guests the Blind Boys of Alabama will be at the Paramount in Huntington Village, 8 p.m. Robert Randolph and the Family Band will be at the Brooklyn Bowl, beginning at 8. Slavic Soul Party will be at Barb's of Brooklyn, 9 p.m. Zane Carney will be at the Rockwood Music Hall, Stage 2, 9 p.m. Looking ahead to Wednesday, March 26th, the Biscuit Kings will be at R.S. Jones in Merrick, 7 p.m.
This is Jerry D. Keep listening to WUSB Stony Brook to find out where your favorite bands will be playing in the area and who's coming to your favorite night spot. Or look at the web version of Concert Billboard at WUSB.FM.
And you're listening to WUSB Stony Brook. It's 2 minutes after 6 o'clock on a Tuesday evening, meaning it's time once again for Off the Wall. Thank you. And a very good evening to everybody. The program is Off the Wall. Emmanuel Goldstein here with you on this Tuesday evening. And yeah, it's going to snow again. Deal with it, people. Yeah, we live in the Northeast. We live in the Northern Hemisphere. It may legally be spring. It may, for some reason, even be the era of daylight savings time, but it's still cold outside, and winter isn't done with us yet. So expect a couple of inches tonight. This has been the best winter ever, and I'm sick of hearing all the complaining, and boy, people complain a lot about this. Still plenty of room in Florida and Texas and places like that. So, yeah, that's something to look forward to tonight. Along with all the other usual things. This is our last show in March. Can you believe that? Yeah, months are just tearing by really quickly. We're going to try to take phone calls tonight. Phone number 631-632-6901. Write that down for future reference. Lots of things going on in the world. And of course, the thing that we continue to be obsessed by is this missing airliner. In fact, you know, how many ways is it possible to say that you don't know anything more? Because CNN is really doing a fine job of filling time with absolutely nothing. I was complaining about this a week ago, and we really don't know much more than what we knew about a week ago. But having the same people day in, day out, giving the same possible summaries and theories and things like that, they look so unhappy. You know, turn this channel on and look at the experts that they've wheeled in for yet another day. I don't know if they pay these people or what, but whatever, it can't be enough just to have to endure the same repeated questions over and over again. Well, what could have happened? Could this have been deliberate? Could this have been an accident? Who knows? Who cares? Well, of course we care. But, I mean, seriously, how much are we going to beat this to death until we actually get more information? There literally has not been anything in the last 24 hours because, well, there was bad weather. In fact, I know more about the weather in the South Indian Ocean than I know about the weather here because they're updating that so much. So, yeah, I know it was very stormy. I know they're going to resume the search today. But really nothing happened in the last 24... I mean, literally nothing happened. But that doesn't stop them from continuously bombarding us with the what-if scenarios and how this technology works. It's interesting, but we've already talked about it a lot. And there are other things going on in the world. Lots of other things going on in the world. You know, there was this massive landslide in Washington State. Up to 200 people might have gotten killed. And I used to think that the media in this country was very, very U.S.-centric. In other words, if somebody trips over a curb here, that's a bigger story than 1,000 people dying overseas. But I guess sometimes when airplanes are involved, when our biggest fears are being faced, that trumps anything that's that might be of interest to us in this country. So you have this story where we don't even know what the death toll is of this massive landslide over there, but it's of third world proportions from what we're seeing and learning. And it's also pretty incredible that we can't keep track of where people are in this day and age of surveillance. Basically, there are something like 176 missing people right now. Nobody knows where they are, and it just seems kind of weird that nobody would know. It's possible that some of these people are duplicates. I don't know how it takes days and days to figure out who's a duplicate and who isn't. But we are at that stage where we don't know how many people were buried. And that's a pretty big story, I think. Let's look at CNN right now. All right, here we are. CNN, breaking news, the very top, after bad weather halted the hunt for a day, search has resumed for Flight 370, the Australian Maritime Safety Authority says. Well, that's a bulletin that just came in, so I guess the top of the page. Okay, so now we have below that a huge headline. One official conclusion, but nine burning questions. Oh, about the landslide. How could it happen? Why weren't people prepared for this type of thing? How come houses continue to be built in areas where the land is not firm? And where things like this are... Oh, no, this isn't about that at all, is it? No, Flight 370 families wait for proof. All right, so they're angry at the Malaysian Prime Minister for saying that all lives were lost, which admittedly was... A bit brusque, I suppose, but probably realistic, but just not done in the best way. But yeah, okay. So another massive part of the page here devoted to that, and then we have stories underneath that. Doppler revealed jet's path, and there's a little map for you to look at. Here's a story about weather delays, wreckage search. Well, we knew that already, didn't we? A couple of opinion pieces up there at the top of the page. A mechanical cause likely. Another opinion piece, was it a hijacking? I think these two pieces are debating each other. And then another story, how much will families be paid? That's really what everybody's concerned about. And then look at this, Will Blitzer over there on the right with the Situation Room. He's actually speaking live. You can see him moving around. All right. Okay, so where's the story I'm looking for? Here we are, trading 2 years of your life for a car. Well, that's a special feature on visionary women. Which is all fine and good, but still don't see the story. Okay, here's another story under the latest. It's got to be under the latest. Mom to die for crime son admitted. No, unless he caused the landslide. No, I don't think that's it. Here's a story. Buffalo Bills founder dies. Well, that's certainly shocking. What was he, 95? Two shot dead on Navy destroyer. Didn't that just happen? Oh, here it is. Landslides, grim toll mounts. Wow, there it is. Thank you, CNN. Thank you for at least just acknowledging something like this. It's so nice of you. I know you're busy with all this repeated news that you like to bring us over and over again. I made a joke the other day, and people actually started to believe it. I said the Anderson Cooper 360 show has now been renamed Anderson Cooper 370. People are like, really? It's believable, isn't it? They might as well just move the channel to channel 370 on all cable systems and just devote the rest of the year to this, because they have, I think they've laid off all of their reporters, because over the weekend they just have nothing but repeat documentaries now and no actual news, no real news, other than repeating what they've been saying about this flight for the last 3 weeks. Having the same tired experts coming in. There's this poor guy flying a flight simulator. He's either doing it 24 hours a day or they keep showing the same footage. And that's another thing. You know, they don't seem to know the meaning of the word live, because when you turn on CNN, half the time it says live at the bottom. But I was watching it the other day and it was daytime in Australia and it was also daytime here. How is that possible? Can't be live unless there's some kind of weird time travel going on. It turns out that they interpret live to mean when the person speaking, reading the news, is live. It doesn't matter that on the screen they're showing something that happened 12 hours ago. And I just can't believe that that is important enough to say, oh yeah, the person speaking right now, the reading the news, is live, and this means this is live coverage. It's not. It's a repeat. It's a repeat of what you did before. You're just having somebody else read it. So ridiculous. Yeah, it's we've got a few issues. A few issues with the way they do things here. And it is a fascinating story. I was talking about it last couple of weeks, in fact. It's something that people are very curious about, to say the least. And it may very well turn out to be something unprecedented as far as mechanical issues or terrorist issues, or who knows? Who knows what's actually behind this? But that's the point. Who knows? Nobody knows. Nobody knows until something is found out. And we can talk about the technology and about how it really didn't seem to be up for this challenge. And there are certain things about the way that that the technology is designed that just simply don't make sense. For instance, there's a voice recorder in the cockpit that records whatever conversation is going on, which can be very valuable. Now, I know there are some pilots that actually object to this, say it's an invasion of privacy, and I can see the point, but in a situation where you are in charge of flying all of these people safely someplace where there have been all kinds of problems in the past, yeah, I think that's more important, knowing what actually happened. It's not a violation of privacy unless something innocuous is used in a bad way. But if something bad happens, we want to know what happened. But the way it's set up now, these voice recorders, they're useless because they record over the audio. After, I think, 4 or 5 hours, is it even that much? It loops and it just simply records over whatever was there before. So obviously in this particular case, if the plane kept flying for 7 hours, everything got erased because it simply looped over itself. Not very smart. There are kids walking around with 1,000 hours of audio on their iPods. How is it that a flight recorder can't have the same or similar technology? Obviously something that's meant to handle a bit more as far as bad conditions, but certainly we can do something more than this. And of course, the whole idea of not knowing where something is, something that size, flying in the air, it makes me wonder, well, if somebody were to fire something at somebody, they really wouldn't know that it was coming, would they? Unless it was sending out a transponder signal. We see a lot of people not paying attention, a lot of technology that doesn't seem to be up to the job. So yeah, there's that. We've learned that, but we learned that a while ago. The rest of the world keeps going. There are things happening all over the place. And when you simply have nonstop coverage of this one event, tragic though it may be, you wind up ignoring everything else. And there is always something else. So, you know, what I'm focusing on right now, in case you're penning a letter saying I'm a hypocrite because I'm doing the same thing right now, I'm focusing on the media coverage. Because not a lot of people are doing that. And I think that's indicative of certain problems that we have. So we will be looking at some other things that happened as well. But there's one other thing that I was kind of curious about. Because whenever something like this happens, obviously people are more concerned and a bit superstitious. And I was wondering, what would it feel like if you're boarding an airplane and you found out it's Flight 370? Yeah, I guess you'd feel a little weird, wouldn't you? But turns out, I just looked this up right before coming in. I went to United Airlines, and sure enough, United has a Flight 370. Departed, actually, you know what? It's departing in a few minutes from San Francisco, 3:57 p.m. It's going to Austin, Texas. United Flight 370. what else? Hang on. It seems like almost every... Yeah, American Airlines has a 370 as well. It goes from Dallas-Fort Worth to Philadelphia. And it also goes from Philadelphia to Dallas-Fort Worth. It has the same flight number both ways. And that's kind of unusual. Who else? Who else would we look up here? Delta? Delta has a Flight 370. It goes from Managua. Oh, wow. How about that? Managua, Nicaragua. It goes from there to Atlanta. And then on to Los Angeles after that. Flight 370 on Delta. So this is, it's not funny, really. But I just happened to print out what you get if you look up that flight, and one of the things in big letters it says underneath it is, plan your escape. I guess it's for people looking to get away, but, you know, Flight 370 plan, you escape. Wow. And then I decided I was going to go over to Malaysian Airlines to see what happened to Flight 370 over there, because I remember TWA Flight 800, when it exploded south of Long Island, the next day there was another TWA Flight 800 that flew the same route. And there was actually a story about that, about, wow, what kind of people get on the flight after? It turned out it was a sold-out flight, and I guess people weren't that concerned. But eventually they renamed it because it just had a bad ring to it. And that apparently is what's happened in Malaysia. If you look up Flight 370, what you get is a Flight 370 for today, tomorrow, and the next day, all of which have been canceled. Leaving Kuala Lumpur at 12:35 a.m., arriving in Beijing 6:30 in the morning. Just canceled across the board. And apparently that's because I guess their system doesn't allow them to just wipe out a flight or rename it. They have to actually cancel every single instance of this flight until it goes off their system. Because if you do want to get from Kuala Lumpur to Beijing, you can't get on Flight 370 anymore. You have to get on Flight 318. And Flight 318 leaves at 12:35 and arrives at 6:30, hopefully. So, yeah, Flight 370 is now Flight 318. It's meaningless information. It's as meaningless as anything else that's being discussed right now, though, on the major networks. At least it's a little bit different. All right. Of more interest to me are the potential conflicts going on in various parts of the world, Ukraine specifically, and where that's going, what that could lead to. You know, I just want to make a point that war is really, really bad and causes all kinds of problems for a very, very long time. When do you think the final victim of World War I met their fate? Now, World War I, for those not familiar, took place, about 100 years ago? 1914? I'm not even sure the exact dates, but it was a big one. It was the big war, the Great War, they called it, because they didn't have a World War II yet. They just had this one. And it was awful. It was awful in many, many ways. And the effects lasted for a very long time. How long, though? Try last Wednesday. Last Wednesday, just about 100 years after World War I, somebody was killed in World War I. How? A shell exploded, killed two construction workers in Belgium. Conventional device from World War I. They were behind a warehouse under construction when the shell exploded, in circumstances that are still under investigation. So, yeah, you know, you can say the war is over, but you still have landmines everywhere from all the different conflicts. You still have unexploded shells. And that's not even adding in all the mental anguish and physical handicaps that people have to deal with for the rest of their lives and passing them on to future generations. You could say a war lasts only a few years, but look at this. 100 years later, it's still killing people. And that's only World War I. Imagine what other surprises are waiting for us. So, yeah, I thought that was really really pretty amazing, pretty crazy. And the whole Crimea thing, of course, is continuing, the whole Ukraine thing. I wonder, I'm asking myself, what exactly would placate the West at this point? They're really angry at Putin for moving into Crimea, for annexing it, after the people there voted overwhelmingly. And even if you believe the election was tainted by fraud, which I still find hard to believe, seeing as how they have such massive popular support in the first place, what is it? What would it take for him to, I don't know, be on our good side again. Russia got kicked out of the G8 yesterday. They don't really care. So now the G8 is a G7, and they're not going to hold their next meeting in Russia. So these are the things that Russia's just going to have to deal with, I suppose. But they can't just give it back. Would that make any sense? There'd be riots. Imagine that, telling people that have just voted overwhelmingly to join Russia that, you know what, we're not going to take you after all. Here, go back to Ukraine, which is the government you hate, and they're not too fond of you either. Is that really what our side wants them to do? What is it going to take? Because obviously that's not going to happen. It's a very difficult situation. Because if you just simply say, oh, you know what, it's okay. It's all right, really. If you do that, well, then you look weak. You've given up. And just like Obama is being blamed yet again for causing this, I would like to know, what would the other side, the Republicans, the McCains, the Kings, what would they have done? I'm actually kind of afraid to find out. Would they actually have engaged Russia on Crimea and started a war over that, where the people wanted Russia to come in and we didn't want them to have that and felt that, yeah, this is our right, even though it's on the other side of the world, it's right next door to Russia, somehow this is our business. Because Obama didn't do that, he's weak. He let Crimea slip away. This is what you're going to be hearing. And ask yourself, when you hear this, what was the alternative exactly? What would you guys have done? What would President McCain have done? What would President Romney have done? And think about that. Think about that next time someone says, oh, they're all the same. Well, on some things, they are all the same. On surveillance, yeah, they are all the same. On all kinds of political corruptness, sure. On something like this, different enough so that maybe the horrors of war are avoided for a fairly good reason. There are times when war is unavoidable. This was not one of them. I saw this comment from the NATO top military commander. Get this, his name is Philip Breedlove. He's the head of NATO, the top military commander, and his name is Breedlove. Do you know anybody with the last name of Breedlove? Never heard that name before. And this is the guy in charge of... Okay, I'll accept it. It's just... Wow, could have knocked me over the feather with that one. So anyway, Supreme Allied Commander. Wow, he's got a lot of titles. And they throw Europe in there, too. I guess that's part of it. Supreme Allied Commander Europe General Philip Breedlove. Does it say that on his door? Does it say that on his desk? He said Russia had a large force on Ukraine's eastern border and that he was worried it could pose a threat to Moldova's separatist Transnistria region. And that's when I said, okay, hold on a second there, Philip. Hold on a second. Poses a threat to Moldova's separatist region. Now, I know this isn't something that a lot of us pay attention to. Most people probably don't even know where Moldova is. It's it borders Ukraine on their western side, I believe. And this the separatist area is actually on the eastern side. And guess what? The people there really, really want Russia to move in. In fact, their government, which is still called the Soviet, has asked if they can join Russia. In other words, break away from Moldova and join Russia. That's what they want to do. Now, this would be a mess on the map because you'd have a little sliver of Russia with Ukraine in the middle. That would be admittedly awkward. But for somebody in charge of NATO to say that he's worried that this could pose a threat to the separatist region, they're separating from Moldova. They want to join Russia. So it's not a threat to them. Yeah, it could be a threat to Ukraine because they'd be surrounded on both sides by Russian forces. But it's certainly not a threat to that particular separatist regime. And I think that's part of the whole misunderstanding here, is that we're being told, as Americans watching our various news broadcasts, when it's not about missing airplanes, we get this sense that Russia is taking over countries in Europe again and stamping out any kind of resistance. When in actuality, it's very, very different. There are a number of places that welcome this kind of a thing, that want to be part of Russia again. Belarus is another, except I think Russia doesn't want Belarus. but they very much would like to be part of something bigger again. It's inconvenient to the West, absolutely. But we can't get everything we want. There's an interesting piece in the Washington Post, how people in South Ossetia, Abkhazia, and Transnistria, another way of saying what I was talking about, how they feel about annexation by Russia. In this piece, they say, we traveled to Transnistria and Moldova in June 2009, to Abkhazia in late 2009, South Ossetia in the spring of 2010. And a fourth de facto state that is separated from Azerbaijan, the Nagorno-Karabakh Republic, in the summer of 2011. As well as conducting interviews, we contracted for public opinion surveys to be conducted following established and rigorous social science standards in each location. And they asked a question. They asked several questions. Was the dissolution of the Soviet Union a right or a wrong step? While the collapse of the Soviet Union was nonviolent in most places, the waning of centralized power and absence of Moscow as outside arbitrator triggered violence in Moldova and the Caucasus regions. Caucasian people, Caucasus region. Got it. A war of laws between nested Soviet governance structures spiraled into ethno-territorial conflict, war and forced population displacement, etc., etc. I'm looking for the answers to these questions, actually. For most residents, it's a straight choice between independence and annexation to Russia. The conclusion is the prospect of annexation by the Russian Federation would likely be welcomed by a plurality of residents of Transnistria and the overwhelming majority of those remaining in South Ossetia. That's part of Georgia right now. So, yeah, you know, this is something that we don't seem to understand in this country. I guess it's hard enough to pronounce these words, let alone find them on a map. But it's a lot easier to just simply view one side as evil, view our side as good, and realize that war is inevitable. Well, pretty much all that is wrong. Meanwhile, Visa and MasterCard, get this, they're blocking Russian bank customers as a result of U.S. sanctions. Yeah, this is really getting a little crazy now. Four banks so far affected, all of which have links to Russians who are blacklisted by the U.S. Visa and MasterCard are both U.S.-based companies. They are forbidden from having any dealings with those targeted by the sanctions. So this is affecting all kinds of people now. And who knows where it's going to go from here? Who knows what kind of boycotts and shutdowns there will be. And this story that I saw in Russia Today, so take it for what it's worth, but it's unlikely they totally made it up. There's a recent robbing of passengers traveling from Russia to Moldova via Ukraine's territory by a local ultra-nationalist insurgent. Actually, a local ultra-nationalist insurgent army. A whole army of insurgents. Okay. The Russian Foreign Ministry said this is a manifestation of anarchy. This happened on March 21st. The train en route from Moscow to the capital of Moldova, Chișinău, made a scheduled stop in the city of Vinnytsia in central Ukraine. To the horror of passengers, people dressed in the uniform of the Ukrainian Insurgent Army, the UPA, got into carriages and began a document check. People who showed Russian passports were then made to hand over their money and gold and jewelry. The robbery was accompanied with political sensitization. I don't know what that means. But Moscow also said it was bewildered by the refusal of the Ukrainian police to take any action when the victims attempted to file a report. That is a kind of rule of law that is currently being formed in Ukraine, the ministry said. It seems that the anarchy of the beginning of the 20th century is reviving. A similar incident occurred with passengers traveling from the Ukrainian city of Kryvyi Rih to the Russian capital. That's according to the NTV channel. However, this time it was either Ukrainian border guards or customs service officers who were involved. According to passengers, during the border control procedure, Ukrainian officers grabbed passports from Russian citizens, providing them with no explanation, and then offering to sell them back their passports for 6,000 rubles, equivalent to about $166. Wow. So if things like that are actually happening, and I do say if, they're certainly not being reported here. And something else, just to make it even more interesting, I heard this today. A Ukrainian ultra-nationalist leader was shot dead in what officials describe as a special forces operation. Now, I saw this. I saw this scroll by because they were too busy dealing with Flight 370 to actually focus any attention on this story. And I said, wow, okay, this is something to be concerned at, that Russia is actually killing people in Ukraine that are ultra-nationalists, that are posing a threat. That's just what I thought by seeing that go by, special forces operation. Because the Ukrainian government was describing it that way. It sounded like an accusation. Turns out it's a Ukrainian special forces operation. They did this. This guy died in a shootout with police in a cafe. He was a leader of Right Sector, a far-right group prominent in the recent anti-government protests. The previous government, that is. But apparently there was some kind of organized crime thing going on, and it was had nothing to do with the whole Russia thing. So yeah, there's that as well. And their foreign minister has been let go. The defense minister, rather, has been let go because, during this whole thing, when the Crimea was being overrun, they weren't getting any orders from Kiev. They weren't getting any orders from the capital of the country they were supposedly a part of, almost as if they had completely lost control, maybe even lost interest in the situation. So people, the soldiers in Crimea pretty much had to make their own decisions. Unfortunately, they made good decisions as far as not trying to face off against the Russians. That would not have ended well. All right, our phone number is 631-632-6901. I'd like to hear people's opinions, thoughts, concerns on whatever is going on in the world. Of course, we want to know what you think happened to Flight 3. No, unless you have some inside information, let's see if we can talk about something else, because I'm sure there's plenty of other things going on. We don't have to confine ourselves to what happened in these stories. There's a lot more going on. We'll be back in delay in just one moment.
This is Tom Woods, author of The Politically Incorrect Guide to American History. You're listening to WUSB Stony Brook.
And here we are in delay. We're getting better at this, aren't we? Yeah, 631-632-6901 is our phone number. And we'd like to hear from as many people as possible. Wow, phone calls are coming in. Let's take one. Good evening, you're on Off the Wall.
These two, an awesome show. Great stuff.
Thank you. Thank you. Where are you calling from?
Patchogue.
Patchogue, great. Do you have any opinions on anything we've been talking about?
I think everything you're talking about is pretty on target. I mean, it's too bad the media's kind of lost its way.
Yeah, they've lost their way. It's not the first time, obviously, and probably won't be the last, but, you know, there's alternative media out there. We can seek it out.
Definitely awesome. That's what's great about a station like USB, hearing different opinions.
Well, good to hear that. Thanks thanks for your support.
You built great work.
All right, take care.
Okay, have a good day. Bye.
And those other people are on the line. I know you probably fell off into some kind of timeout land. Please call back 631-632-6901. We would like to hear from other people out there. Good evening. You're on Off the Wall.
Hi.
Hi. Where are you calling from?
I'm in Coram.
Coram, okay.
What I want to say is I know it's about the flight, whatever, but you know the black box you're talking of?
Uh-huh.
I'm not really too technical savvy, but instead of having the box in the plane, couldn't it be like where everything is being recorded, but recorded to where it's like stored on Earth somewhere?
Yeah, like in literally in the cloud, because we do have that kind of technology where a constant stream could be set up from an airplane, a constant data stream, and every bit of data could, yes, be logged someplace else.
But you wouldn't have to wait to find the plane or whatever, too, you know.
Mm-hmm.
Would help, I think.
Of course, that stream could be disrupted by a catastrophic event, but at least you'd have a lot of data up until that point, which we have no data really to explain anything to say, okay, there was an intrusion at this point or somebody touched this dial at this particular moment. We don't know any of that because it's all that information is stored in something we can't find.
And it could be like both places, on the plane in the box, but also on Earth, so this way it would help you get to the plane to find in case you say it was disrupted by something. You know?
It's redundancy. It's a way of backing your data up. It's the most basic concept, and we seem to have let that go. It's unfortunate. The other thing that really bugs me, this black box has a ping on it that after 30 days, the battery runs out and it stops pinging, apparently. So there's not going to be very little way to find it after that. How is it possible in this day and age that they don't have something a bit more rigorous that can last longer? Maybe only send out the ping once an hour or something, but make it a really good ping.
Or have a charging system on it or something.
Something, yeah, anything. There are ways to do this. It seems like we're using 1950s technology still because no one ever bothered to update it.
You know, people aren't really important except for fighting wars. So, you know, if you lose a few on a plane, I guess the government don't care.
Well, these are people that could have fought in a war. Now they can't do that. But yeah, I hear what you're saying. Any theories though, as long as we're on the subject?
Not really. No, a lot of things happen. It could be another conspiracy for some. I have no idea.
I kind of prefer the conspiracy because that at least is interesting. I don't want to hear about another plane that went down in the ocean and because of some stupid mistake or technological reason. I want to hear about some mastermind someplace who is so good that he's able to hide a 777 and 239 people and not have any chatter about it and just basically hold the world hostage with their evil plan.
Yeah, like something like vanishing paint or something put on it, or I don't know.
I'm sure there are ways. There are ways to hide. People say there's no way you can hide a 777. You know, you can hide all kinds of things. You can bury things. You can paint things over. You know, speaking of paint,
those master magicians sometimes, and they move buildings. So
that's right. They do. Okay. Yeah. I mean, sure. Anything's possible. But they were talking about how difficult it is to spot pieces of a white plane in an ocean where there are white caps. You can't tell the difference from a wave and a piece of an airplane. Well, you know what? In my simplistic way, why not make it a rule that you don't have white airplanes? You make them all some color that obviously would stand out and be seen easily.
Too easy.
Yeah. Or maybe, you know, put some kind of infrared on it so it could be spotted with night vision, so you could search at night as well.
Stuff, whatever, yeah. I'm just dumbfounded, but everything is that you find. The research is there only when it's profitable for somebody, I guess, or something, and
uh-huh.
They're making their flights, making their money. One goes down, that's all, whatever.
Yeah, It's obviously a very unsettling situation and fills people with all kinds of concerns, but we really do seem to be obsessive about it. And I just wonder, where is it going to stop? Because eventually they're going to find something. They might even find something today, because they're searching now and they seem to be narrowing in on some debris, so maybe that'll be something. But you know what? There's lots of debris in the ocean. There really is.
You're right about it. Like, there is so much really other things going on in the world, too. Like, keep up on it, but move on, too. Like.
Yeah, I mean, North Korea, they keep firing missiles. They fired 30 missiles the other day. It's like they're saying, hey, we're still here, you know, pay attention to us. Look, here's 30 missiles. That used to get page one headlines. Now nobody even cares anymore. I feel so sorry for them.
And I know we're supposed, like, everyone's supposed to watch out for everybody else, but I think we should just, like, bring in our concern and just kind of take care of our country first a little bit and you know, then help after we help ourselves.
Fix the infrastructure here a little bit, maybe watch out for landslides so that we don't have 200 missing people. There's all kinds of things that we could be doing to improve our quality of life here, and also pay attention to other parts of the world as well, but just not be so obsessed over one particular thing. I mean, what happens if another plane goes missing? How are they going to have to launch a second channel or something?
Yeah, you just made me laugh. Not in a bad, in a good way, but yeah, it's ridiculous, everything.
Do you have any thoughts on the whole Crimea-Ukraine situation?
No, I mean, actually, just let everybody work out their own things, and we're telling them what to do, and over here we can't even peacefully protest, so it's all just too bizarre.
What protests are you referring to?
Well, even like Occupy Wall Street and everything, like right. People getting beat up and over just trying to speak their mind, and then we're telling other countries how they could be democratic and what they should be doing.
Right. Yeah. You know, it's there are very many parallels to the uprising in Kiev and Occupy Wall Street. We've been talking about this and noting the similarities. And the difference is that those protests worked. They actually resulted in change. And our government supported it and said, hey, this is a good idea. You guys should do this. Of course, when it happens on our shores, it's a horrible thing and must be stopped. Now that they have done that, they have overthrown a government. Some countries would say, hey, that's not right to overthrow an elected government. And if you look at the other side, they just had a popular election to do something, and we're saying, no, you're not allowed to do that either. You're not allowed to keep your elected government, and you're not allowed to vote on an issue that affects all the people in this region.
It's really just overstepping boundaries way too much. It's ridiculous.
And that's what it boils down to in the end, is that it is over our boundary. It's way over on the other side of the world.
Yeah, we got enough going on here. People, senior citizens not getting their medicines, and just people living in the street here, and the world's just going like on the axis changed or something, and people have just got something pushed up their nose, and just something ain't working no more.
Yeah,
people forgot about being people.
Yeah, it seems that way. And I think paying attention and conversing and debating is the way to go, because if you just accept what you're fed, eventually you're going to get very tired of the taste.
Got to roll up the sleeves pretty soon, I think, because, John Lennon, he said, revolution, you count me out, but in, it's like sometimes you got to just, throw away the peace, love, and, not really beat people up, but, there's got to be more to, a little more aggressive somehow, sometimes.
Yeah, definitely. Be alert, be on top of things, and communicate. Hey, thanks. Thanks very much for your call.
Thank you. Keep rocking.
All right. Take care. Good calls today. Well, we still have room for a few more if there's anyone else out there. 631-632-6901. There's one thing I did want to say before signing off tonight, something more positive. It's so great to talk with intelligent people. It's so great to see intelligent people having conversations, dialogues. To see issues brought up and not have to worry about, well, what's this person who completely disagrees with us going to say about this? What's the religious right going to do? Et cetera, et cetera. It's great to see that the program Cosmos has come back. It's simply amazing. It's on every Sunday night now. For those of you who are around in the 70s, might have seen the Carl Sagan version of the program. It's so long overdue to see something that focuses on all that has happened since then, all the discoveries that have been made in science, in astronomy, and to make it interesting, to make it something that we want to see, that we want to be inspired by, and go to the next step. That is really one of the most incredible things. I think more incredible than the fact that that the cosmos are out there, that we're part of this whole amazing, intricate universe, that so many marvels are in existence. More amazing than that is the fact that this show is on Fox. You know, it's like, how in the world did that happen? It's something educational, something really worthwhile, really worth seeing. And I just encourage people to go out and see that if you can. And, you know, there's so many things that you carry with you. For instance, just the concept of the entire history of the universe encompassing 1 year. So right now we're at the very end of that year. And the very beginning of that year is the Big Bang. So that's all 1 year. Now, if you accept that, Big Bang began at midnight, January 1st. And here we are, December 31st, the end of that year. Mankind has been on the scene for pretty much the last few seconds of December 31st. That's it. That's our entire reign in the history of the universe. Makes you feel kind of small, but in a way it's also kind of comforting. Because you realize that all the authority, all the nonsense that we've been exposed to over the millennia really doesn't mean that much. So that's why I like to see things like that. I just kind of put it all in perspective. So, yeah, track that down if you can. It's on Fox every Sunday night, and I think it's on other networks as well. So I have to catch up on those myself. Okay, we only have room for one more phone call, if there are more phone calls. I see the switchboard is empty now. 631-632-6901. I'll keep blabbering on for a moment or two to see if anyone can dial quickly. While I'm doing that, turns out that there have been these stories lately about people trespassing at the World Trade Center. Have you heard about this? Yeah, and by the way, it's not called the Freedom Tower, so please, people, stop calling it the Freedom Tower. That was a name for a little while, and they changed it back to the World Trade Center. I'd hate for that name to come back. It's a silly name. But apparently a 16-year-old kid broke in last week and made it all the way to the top. And, you know, it used to be that breaking into a building wasn't that big a deal. I mean, it's just a building. Yeah, it's the building that was the site of a terrorist act, I know, but he wasn't flying an airplane into it. He simply went past a security guard and made it to the top because, wow, I can do that. It used to be breaking into a building was not a newsworthy event. But, of course, in this particular case, it was. And that led to the revelation that these other people who actually parachuted off the World Trade Center last year, well, their identities were revealed this week as well. Three people climbed to the top of the tower, 1,776 feet off the ground at 3 a.m. on September 30th, and jumped off while a fourth man kept watch below. And they made a video of this, too. They floated silently through the dark and landed on West Street, near Vesey Street. A security guard at Goldman Sachs spotted them folding up their parachutes and called the cops. And that's really the only person that spotted them. And it turns out they're local. They're from Suffolk County. they're right around here, which I thought was pretty interesting. But these things are not necessarily threats. They might point out some security holes, some ways you can get past people. But even if you're able to do that, doesn't necessarily mean that you're up to no good, or that that's the only way that people who are up to no good can get past the security systems. So, okay, you know what? We don't have time for calls. I'm going to exit delay now. And back live, our email address is otw@2600.com. please write to us and let us know what's on your mind, because we certainly like to hear from our listeners. And until next week, Emmanuel Goldstein for Off the Wall. Have a good night.
Tell you a little bit about my, yo. I was born in a season where the world was quiet and cold. Celebrations were going on. Some were happy, some were sad. Some felt bad from being good. Some felt good from being bad. And feelings pass and change, but they never leave. They here to stay. Holiday, holiday, happy birthday. Teenage love, the first cut, run deep. So long flesh, this is the Brooklyn streets. Year of the Ox, 7 and 3, MD. The history, come on. Every soul got one D. Yes. It's where you been and where you be. And without understanding, you cannot proceed complete. It start, then it end. Then it just go round again.
Am I loot, am I shoot, am I wear?
Again.
Yeah. Loot by the
fresh, fresh.
Squidward worship what they have. Ford was president, do the math. War was ending when the North Vietnamese stormed the city of Saigon. He was like, bye, we was gone, let bygones be bygones. I'm gone, spread love, it's the Brooklyn way. Where they hug you with the firearm, tied on. Like new school clothes, black star officially. Smash when we do shows, acts no mystery. I'm down with the cool like Mussolini in Italy. I rock with the roots like the Givenchy. Powerful bigotry of what me and my people got.
History.
These rappers dumb it down considerably. We get it popping like a hit chorus. The flow is historic. They can't get rid of us, ubiquitous. And we lay the law like Leviticus. 10 years ago we made history, so they miss us.
Am I loot, am I shoot, am I weird?
Yeah.
Fresh, 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 cool.
But it keep on.
Yo, yo. Let's move. Even if the blend into ephemera, I fade into peripheral. Transmission of the minister's original will broadcast clear without diminishing. Black star, soul top burning, soul temperatures and ministers. Alkalines, aminos, and minerals, essentials. Served over dinner time signatures. It's miracle material, remembrance right now, forever.
Am I loot, am I shoot, am I weird?
Yeah.
Loot by the
fresh, fresh.
But he's dead, but he's dead.
My friends, this is Finn. This is Finn's Revolution right here on WUSB Stony Brook. We were off last week, preempted by some basketball. Glad to be back. Tonight we're doing a special on the genius Alex Chilton. He a big star. He of the Box Tops, you know, the song, The Letter, all that. And we're going to be interviewing Holly George Warren, author of a great biography, and raffling off some stuffs, kind of. Kids. In the background here, The Letter by the Box Tops, sung by 16-year-old Alex Chilton. And in a few moments, we're going to be speaking with Holly George Warren of Rolling Stone magazine, among many other publications. And she just came out with a fantastic book called Man Called Destruction, The Life and Music of Alex Chilton. And she was a friend of Alex's and someone we know very well at this particular juncture, and just a great, great writer, a great, great tome. And we're going to kick off Radiothon one night early right here. It's actually supposed to begin tomorrow evening. But just for these specific items, we're going to be, for a pledge of $30, you have a choice of two things, and we have two of each of them. And so it's going to be a very moderate radiothon. Item number one is a signed copy of the brand new book, which just came out yesterday, A Man Called Destruction, The Life and Music of Alex Chilton. And you can get that for a pledge of $30 to this station, a credit card pledge. Right now, 631-632-6901. You can also get yourself a copy of the film, Nothing Can Hurt Me, the big star, and Alex Chilton, I should say, story. Copy of the DVD with the extras and all the rest of it for a pledge of $30. 631-632-6901. Get you all that. We're going to be talking more about that as the evening goes, but you can call anytime and get yourself a copy of either one of those. I just have a couple of each, and 631-632-6901, a pledge of $30 will get you a copy
of either of those. The brand new book by Holly George Warren, A Man Called Destruction, The Life and Music of Alex Chilton, or a copy of the film, Nothing Can Hurt Me, on DVD for a pledge of $30. 631-632-6901. We're going to start the interview in just a few moments, but meanwhile, here's another classic Box Tops tune. Alex Chilton didn't get to write too much for the Box Tops because he was kind of pushed out of the scene. He was the singer at age 16, and it was songwriters that did it, including some great songwriters. But one of the great covers he relished, and which came out as a single from one of the Box Tops records, was this cover of Bob Dylan right here on WUSB. Stony Brook, give us a call. Make a pledge to this station, 631-632-6901.
They say everything can be replaced. They say every distance is not needed. So I remember everything of every man. I swear I see my reflection somewhere so high above this wall. I see my life come shining from the west down to the east. Any day now, any day. Shouting so loud, just crying out that he was free. I see my life.